The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent, a weekly show that aims to address the most significant issues in the South Asian region. And in today's episode, we'll be discussing two major issues: how a new world order is taking shape amid the Russia-Ukraine war, and also Iran and India deciding to conduct trade in local currencies. So stay tuned.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we will discuss how a new world order is taking shape amid the Russian-Ukraine war. And we shall also take a look at Iran and India decide to conduct trade in local currencies.
In the recent past, top-level meetings between China and Russia, with Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi's trip to Beijing, has highlighted an unprecedented level of alignment amongst the Eurasian powers. On the other hand, the growing relations between Russia and India will possibly extend to Iran as well. Strategic relations experts believe that the withdrawal of the United States from West Asia has provided a ripe time for a credible and stronger role for India, China, Russia, and Iran to offer an alternative model of good relations and development in the region.
Political meetings between the Eurasian countries have multiplied. Russian delegations constantly visit Tehran to study Iran's sanctions evasion experience. The trade between the two sides has increased, with both the countries agreeing to conduct deals in currencies other than the U.S. dollar. The war in Ukraine has led to new alliances, thus changing the global order. It has brought India and Russia closer and also strengthened the relations between Tehran and Moscow. On its part, India has not participated in the sanctions campaign against Moscow in response to the Russia-Ukraine war. Despite severe Western sanctions on Moscow, New Delhi has recently emerged as the largest buyer of Russian crude oil. As far as China is concerned, Beijing and Tehran have signed a 25-year comprehensive strategic partnership, and regardless of sanctions, China continues to buy Iranian oil. Iran has also permanently joined the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, of which China and Russia are leading members. Coming to India-Iran relations, the two countries have a deep historical background of close association. Iran and India happen to be special countries that have nurtured unique relations for centuries. Foreign policy analysts believe that a new axis is going to emerge between Moscow, Beijing, Tehran, and New Delhi, which is expected to bring major change to the geopolitics of the region, thus helping to create a new global order.
In a recent speech, the chief of the defense staff of the Indian Army, General Anil Chauhan, said that the global security environment is currently changing and the new order is yet to crystallize. In this emerging scenario, Russia, China, and Iran are getting closer, and India's proximity to these countries puts it at a special position in this new world order. In another development, Iran and India are cooperating in the defense sector. The Director General of India Defense Intelligence said Tehran and New Delhi are exploring avenues for military cooperation in newer domains.
All is not well with India and America relations. While threatening to sanction New Delhi for buying missile defense system from Russia, the United States of America is providing nuclear submarines to Australia, practically breaking the Quad Alliance between the U.S., India, Japan, and Australia. India's position on the Russia-Ukraine war has not been critical of Moscow. New Delhi has also abstained from voting against Russia at the United Nations. Russia has also reportedly offered to intercede between China and India. According to strategic relations experts, this growing bonhomie between Russia and India, with China and Iran also on the same side, can lead to the formation of a new alliance of Asian powers. Mentioning the growing defense engagement between Tehran and New Delhi, the Director General of India's Defense Intelligence, Lieutenant General D.S. Rana, said the friendship between the two countries is expected to grow further and become stronger. According to official sources, India and Iran had been discussing ways in which both countries can have a greater partnership between the two naval forces. Both sides are also planning to expand their partnership by way of greater military-industry collaboration.
Now, to have more insights on this, we are joined by fellow at Manohar Parrikar Institute for Defense Studies and Analyses, Dr. Mohammad Mudassir Qamar from New Delhi. First of all, welcome to the program, sir. Now, the Indian Army Chief recently said that a new global order is taking shape. He pointed to the growing proximity between Russia, China, and Iran. So the question is, where do you see India in this alliance?
If you look at India's foreign policy and international relations, it is multi-aligned. India does not really believe in alliance politics. India does not believe in bloc politics, whether it is at the regional level or at the international level. So yes, Russia, China, and Iran are close partners and they are geopolitically aligned. But when it comes to India, it has multiple global partners, multiple regional partners, be it Russia, be it United States, or be it Iran. And in that sense, I don't really see India becoming part of an alliance or a bloc as far as the Russia-China-Iran alignment is concerned.
Dr. Qamar, the relations between India and Russia have seen a surge, and the relations between Russia and China are also growing. So do you think Moscow can play a role in easing the Sino-Indo tensions?
India-China problems are basically bilateral in nature. They share a long boundary in India's north and China's south. Basically, it is the mountainous region, Himalayan range. And these problems cannot be resolved through third-party intervention or mediation. These are problems which India and China will have to resolve bilaterally. And there has been some negotiations and talks, you know, which are institutionalized, which are going on between both New Delhi and Beijing. So the question of Russia's mediation, in my understanding, does not arise here, because both India and China do not necessarily want a mediator at this point of time. They are ready to talk bilaterally and might be able to resolve their problems bilaterally.
Dr. Qamar, recently the director of Indian Intelligence Agency, Lieutenant General Rana, indicated to the expansion of defense cooperation between Tehran and New Delhi. So what's your take on this?
India and Iran, friendly countries, they have very strong partnership and cooperation in various domains, be it bilateral trade, economy, or even in terms of energy, even though that energy partnership has led to been disrupted because of external factors. But if you look at Iran's location and India's location, they are basically neighbors. And if you look at the history of the partnership between India and Iran, they are very, very strongly embedded in the regional cooperation between the Gulf region and the South Asia region. And this is something very important. Now, as far as security issues are concerned, India and Iran are both interested in security of the Western Indian Ocean, of the Persian Gulf, of the Arabian Sea, and the entire maritime zone in this area. And in that sense, there is certainly a possibility of partnership between India and Iran. In some ways, it already exists through the Indian Ocean Rim Association, and as well as through some bilateral engagement. If we recall, India's Defense Minister Rajnath Singh was in Tehran some time back, a few years back. Iranian Defense Minister also has visited India. So if you look at the possibility of the two countries engaging in certain defense-related cooperation, security-related cooperation, it very much exists. And there is always some discussion between India and Iran on security.
Last but not least, Dr. Rama, we are witnessing major geopolitical changes in the Indian Ocean. So to what extent will these changes bring Tehran and New Delhi closer?
The Indian Ocean region is a very, very important region as far as global geopolitics is concerned, Asian geopolitics is concerned. If you look at the Indian Ocean region, this is one of the most important, most vital global maritime routes for, you know, shipping and international trade. It connects Asia, both South Asia and Southeast Asia, and then North Asia to Africa, to the Mediterranean, to the Arabian Peninsula and Western Asia, as well as to Europe. And then if one goes beyond Africa to also the, Latin America and, Western Africa. So in terms of geopolitics, this is very, very significant region. And there are a lot of things going on between in this region over the past few years. There is a certain alignment between countries which have common interests, such as India, Japan, Australia, and the US, which is an external power, but is still present in this region. And there are European countries also which are interested in this region. Now, when it comes to Iran, I mean, its geography and its location, plus being a resource-rich country, if you look at its demography, its history, its civilization, it has always been involved in the geopolitics of Southwest Asia region, which is, if you look at Indian Ocean littorals, the region which, if the broader Indian Ocean region is defined in a broader terms, Iran automatically becomes part of this region.
On that note, I would like to thank Dr. Ghamar from Manohar Parrikar Institute for Defense Studies and Analyses. Thank you for being on the program, sir. Now, let's see what people have to say around the world.
Takhsaiti Abdelghani tweeted, Indian Army Chief of Staff, the alliance between Russia and China is attracting Iran, and these two countries are getting closer to forming their alliance, with Iran joining, working to expand bilateral military cooperation. Dr. Shahid Siddiqui wrote, on Army Day, Ambassador of Iran said, the defense relations between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Republic of India are going through a growing process in the framework of the comprehensive relations between the two countries. Spryder tweeted, Turkish politician, our future is in Asia. The leader of Turkey's Vatan Party said that Ankara's destiny is an Asian civilization, which is now emerging under the leadership of Russia, China, Iran, and India. Doğu Perinçek called NATO membership not freedom but captivity. Sahan Fagul writes, the new world order, 30 countries ready to accept the new BRICS Plus currency. The countries are Afghanistan, Algeria, Argentina, Bahrain, Bangladesh, Belarus, Brazil, China, Egypt, Indonesia, Iran, Kazakhstan, Mexico, Nicaragua, Nigeria, Pakistan, Russia, India, and BRICS Plus.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent here on IRIB English Radio.
Iran and India have long shared a bond rooted in culture, civilization, and political understanding. Currently, their economic ties have taken a center stage, presenting a plethora of opportunities and excellent prospects. Recent statistics have shown a significant growth in trade between these two nations. In his recent visit to Iran, the National Security Advisor to Indian Prime Minister Ajit Doval discussed many issues, including the problems related to bilateral banking, with his Iranian counterpart Ali Shamkhani.
It is evident that the economic collaboration between Tehran and New Delhi is reaching new heights. Bilateral trade between the two countries has witnessed a significant surge in recent years. According to reports in 2022, the total trade volume reached a staggering $2.5 billion, with a remarkable growth rate of 48%. This upward trade trajectory can be attributed to Iran's increased oil exports to India, even in the face of Western sanctions that have posed considerable challenges. The recent meetings between economic experts and members of the Iranian Iraq Chamber of Commerce have shown immense possibilities for collaboration between the two countries. Economic experts on both the sides have highlighted the abundant opportunities for trade and emphasized that the existing trade volume between India and Iran can be elevated to match that of countries like the United Arab Emirates and Turkey. The prospect of joint investments in technology transfer holds immense promise, aiming to benefit both the countries in the long run. India's keen interest in exploring the economic opportunities in Iran underscores their readiness to increase commercial exchanges and capitalize on the untapped potential. The growing relations between India and Iran signal a transformative chapter in their partnership.
As the world witnesses a shifting global economic landscape, India and Iran have been forging closer ties in the realm of trade and finance. Recent developments indicate a growing emphasis on de-dollarization and the use of national currencies for bilateral trade. By prioritizing their national currencies, both the countries demonstrate a mutual commitment to pursue shared economic goals free of external pressures. It also opens avenues for other countries to explore similar alternatives, leading to a more diverse global economic system.
On his recent trip to Tehran, the Indian National Security Advisor Ajit Doval held significant discussions and consultations with Iranian diplomats and policymakers. One of the most important proposals discussed was the activation of a Rial Rupee mechanism, which is believed to play a pivotal role in facilitating bilateral trade and bolstering economic cooperation between the two countries. The aim is to reduce dependency on traditional currency channels and explore the potential of using national currencies for transactions, thereby solidifying the economic partnership. Ali Shamkhani, the secretary of the Supreme National Security Council of Iran, expressed the country's eagerness to increase the usage of national currencies in trade with India. He stressed that this move would serve the economic goals shared by Tehran and New Delhi. According to economic experts, the potential benefits of moving away from the dollar extend beyond economic autonomy. By conducting trade in the national currencies, India and Iran can safeguard themselves against the volatility of foreign exchange rates, mitigate the impact of international sanctions, and foster stronger economic partnerships. The rupee-rial trade and the de-dollarization present an opportunity for India and Iran to leverage their respective strengths and develop a self-sustaining economic ecosystem. Experts believe that this evolving trade carries immense potential for reshaping global economic dynamics and strengthening bilateral ties.
Now, to have more insight on this, we are joined by the Dean of International Studies School, JNU, Professor Aswini Mohapatra from New Delhi. Thank you for being on the program, Professor. Now, Iran and India share a long history of partnership. What has changed in recent years, and what is the current state of relations between the two countries?
If you say current state of affairs, state of relation between the two countries, I think there are sufficient signs of improvement in the bilateral relation between the two countries. After some kind of differences or misunderstanding over these Chahabar deal in say 2019 and between 2019 and 2021, I think things are improving. Because you need to understand the bilateral relation between Iran and India are, you know, firmly rooted in their civilizational ties and the cultural similarities in many ways, and the mutual appreciation, admiration of each other, their historical background, and the cultural aspect of it. So that apart, in the contemporary period, if you say Iran and India on the pages of regency together, notwithstanding the change of regime in Iran, notwithstanding the fact that, you know, the major political party in India has been replaced by the opposition party, for example, the NDA in the last 10 years. But the relation between two countries, nevertheless, have remained, I think, as usual. And certain points of time, we have seen the sudden surge in the bilateral ties between two countries. And because of the external factors than the bilateral differences, the relation between two countries has been hampered.
Professor, given the recent surge in trade between India and Iran, what factors contributed to this growth, and how do you see or foresee this trend shaping the future economic landscape of the both nations?
Future landscape, you see, there are areas where both the countries can together develop the economic relations, trade ties. At the same time, the two countries together can involve the like-minded countries around, okay, either in the form of a kind of economic grouping or in an informal kind of, say, the community of countries together to expand their economic and commercial ties. And specifically, I would like to identify the areas like, India until Iran until recently happened to be the second largest exporter of energy to India, oil particularly to India. And the Indian government of late has been trying hard to revive that. They kind of making Iran as one of the major source of energy to India. And second is, for example, the two countries together can work in the area of connectivity, in the area of manufacturing, and in the area of, for example, digitalization, where you'll find India has been doing significantly well across in the world today in terms of digitalization of economy, digitalization of these, you know, the administrative structure, or for example, that's reaching out to the people in India through this digitalized economy. So here, this area also, India can contribute a lot to the Iranian side.
Professor, let's also talk about the activation of a rial rupee mechanism, which has been proposed to facilitate bilateral trade. In your opinion, what are the potential benefits and challenges associated with implementing such a mechanism?
Potential benefit, I think you must be knowing about it. So that's facilitate better trade relation between the two countries without any external interference in terms of conversion of the local currency, be it rial or rupee, into dollar. And the dependence on that particular currency, that's one aspect of it. And second, this is what, in a way, the two countries have been engaged in, and what is normally called the barter system. So that could be extended further to make this kind of exchange as a kind of useful mechanism to expedite trade relations between the two countries. But the problem here is because Iran has come under certain sanction, particularly sanction like SWIFT.
Last but not least, Professor, recently the two sides discussed the untapped potential for collaboration in various sectors. So what are the specific areas where India and Iran can leverage their strengths and forge mutually beneficial partnerships beyond traditional trade?
Say speculative questions, you see. The international politics is full of uncertainty. And as I mentioned earlier, the contemporary global order is, you know, fragmented and fluid. So it does offer opportunities as well as certain limitations. And the opportunities only are not linked to this, the state of relationship the two countries here. Because the relationship also to some extent is constrained or in a way facilitated by the favorable or the unfavorable international system. And there are certain areas, as I mentioned before, that where both the countries can come together and work on expediting the relationship. As I mentioned before, the connectivity. We have these international north-south transport corridor, and how to, you know, the agreement signed way back in 2002.
There you have it, Professor Aswini Mohapatra from the International Studies School, JNU, in New Delhi. Thank you for being on the program, Professor. Now let's see what people have to say on social media.
Deblina Sarkar wrote, "Hats off to Ajit Duwal, sir. India is now going to trade in Indian rupee with Iran. U.S. can continue to do what it wants." Shining Star tweeted, "Ajit Duwal in Tehran. India-Iran hold talks for Rial Rupee Mechanism for Trade, Economic Cooperation, Connectivity, Chabahar Port Project, Afghanistan. U.S. will not like this." Rituparna Bharat Sarma wrote, "Trade an important tool for strengthening relation. India and Iran bilateral Exim trade grew by 48% to reach $2.5 billion in 2022. Bilateral trade can touch $30 billion between two if regulate Rial Rupee payment. India playing an important role for Iran trade amidst U.S. and Western sanction upon Iran."
And that was our episode on the growing alliance between Iran, India, Russia and China, and also Iran and India moving towards local currencies in their trade deals. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
A senior British military officer claimed the country's forces should be ready for a conflict with Russia and prepare their families for the possibility of a large-scale deployment for war. His advice came after the new chief of the British Army claimed the British military must be able to defeat Russia in direct combat. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Financial Times has covered this story and tells us more. Britain's Secretary of State for Defence, Ben Wallace, has raised the alarm about the imminent war with Russia and China, saying conflict is coming. Ben Wallace said the United Kingdom could be in a direct conflict with Russia and China in the next 7 years and urged for more military spending to purportedly counter the potential threat. Ben Wallace, who had previously admitted that what remains today of the former British Empire's military is an empty shell, urged lawmakers to agree to an increase in Britain's military budget. The official claimed that the world will be a more dangerous, unstable place by the end of the decade and that defence will be more critical in our lives. He explained that the world is seeing the end of the abnormal period of peace post-Cold War, and that a conflict is coming with a range of adversaries around the world. Britain's Defence Secretary has already pleaded to Chancellor of the Exchequer Jeremy Hunt to increase Britain's military budget spending to 2.5% from 2.1% of gross domestic product or GDP. Ben Wallace had previously stated that Britain's army is hollowed out and underfunded. In the meantime, Britain's Defence Secretary has praised the German government for recently announcing plans to set up a 100 billion euro fund to modernise the German army. He described Berlin's move as an important message for people across Britain, that we're going back to the days where you need to invest in defence. However, as Ben Wallace pushes for more military spending and better support for Ukraine in the West's proxy war against Russia, Britain has been grappling with soaring inflation and high cost of living. The United Kingdom's cost of living crisis, driven by sharp food and energy price rises, has left the British people and British businesses struggling to pay their bills, as Britain's economy experiences its worst conditions in decades. According to market researcher Kantar, Britain's grocery market inflation has soared to 17.1%, hitting prices for milk and eggs the hardest. The increase in basic grocery prices could add to the cost of a family's typical buying basket by £811 per year. The costs of daily use groceries and numerous other items have increased primarily as a result of the rise in energy costs since the start of the war between Russia and Ukraine last year. Economic hardships have prompted most workers in some industrialized countries to stage protests and strikes, asking for fair wages and better working conditions. France Press has also covered this story and tells us more. The United Kingdom has announced a series of fresh sanctions against Russia over a special operation in Ukraine targeting Moscow's mineral sector. The coercive measures unveiled recently include a ban on imports of aluminium, diamonds, copper and nickel from Russia. Britain said it would introduce a ban on Russian diamonds and target more entities involved in President Putin's military-industrial complex. London has also sanctioned 86 individuals and companies working for Russia's military, energy, metals and shipping industries. The announcement comes ahead of the summit of the Group of Seven Developed Countries, or G7, in the Japanese city of Hiroshima, a city destroyed by a US atomic bomb in 1945. Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak flew into Hiroshima, Japan for the three-day gathering of world leaders with a self-declared mission to push India into showing greater support for Ukraine. Rishi Sunak said, "One thing we have to keep doing is talking to countries like India and also Brazil. That is going to be in that second part of the summit, which is a good thing." The G7 summit is expected to introduce the host of new sanctions on Moscow. A senior U.S. administration official said there will be upwards of 300 new sanctions against individuals, entities, vessels and aircraft. On Thursday, 18th of May, a European Union official said they might target Russia's multi-billion dollar diamond industry. The official said, "We believe we need to limit exports from Russian trade in this sector." Belgium, a member of the European Union, is among the largest wholesale buyers of Russian diamonds, along with India and the United Arab Emirates. The United States is a major end market for the finished product. Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak claimed, as today's sanctions announcements demonstrate, the G7 remains unified in the face of the threat from Russia and steadfast in our support for Ukraine. The United States and its allies have imposed a slew of sanctions on Moscow since its special operation in Ukraine began last year. Moscow has downplayed Western sanctions as having no practical effect. Russia began a special operation in Ukraine on 24th of February 2022 as part of a national security measure against the persisting eastern advance of the NATO military alliance, as well as protecting eastern Ukraine's Russian-speaking population against hostile efforts by Kiev. Since then, the United States and most European Union member states have supplied Ukraine with tens of billions of dollars worth of weaponry, including rocket systems, drones, armored vehicles, tanks, communication systems, and despite Russia's repeated warnings that the Western military assistance will only prolong the war, this Western military aid to Ukraine has continued. The English website of Al Jazeera Television Network has also covered the same story. Britain has announced plans to provide Ukraine's Western-backed military with hundreds of long-range attack drones, coinciding with a high-profile visit to London by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who is expected to ask for more weapons. The government declared in a statement recently, the Prime Minister will confirm the further UK provision of hundreds of air defence missiles and further unmanned aerial systems, including hundreds of new long-range attack drones with a range of over 200 kilometres. The 10 Downing Street statement further vowed, these will be delivered over the coming months as Ukraine prepares to intensify its attacks against Russian forces amid a new US-led push to supply Kiev with massive amounts of advanced weaponry in anticipation of widely publicized spring offensive to retake territory lost to the Russians. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak claimed in a boastful statement ahead of his talks with Volodymyr Zelensky, this is a crucial moment in Ukraine's resistance to a terrible war of aggression they did not choose or provoke. Rishi Sunak's remarks was described by local observers as quite ironic in view of Britain's heavy involvement in destructive US-led wars of aggression against Afghanistan and Iraq, amid its history of waging military interventions and establishing colonial rules in countries across the globe. Britain became the first Western country to provide Kiev's forces with a long-range cruise missile named the Storm Shadow. The Storm Shadow is a turbojet-powered missile that cruises at 0.8 Mach to a maximum range of 560 kilometers. However, Moscow has warned that it will hold the countries supplying long-range weaponry to Kiev responsible for any attack on Russian territory, and that it reserves the right to respond in kind. Britain, after the United States, is the second largest provider of advanced weaponry and armament to Ukraine. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in recent days has also held talks with the leaders of Germany, Italy and France, demanding more supply of weaponry for Kiev.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. Well, in this program, we answer the questions that you have related to Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Well, today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Nakavi, who's a faculty member at the Al-Mustafa University. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
Professor, you have been helping us with the tips of self-defense, how children can defend themselves in the societies they are living in, because not every day is a good day. Sometimes our children faced with the situations wherein they have to deal with the things themselves. And what we have been discussing in the previous episode was very important. The ability to say no, which is a very important self-defense tool. The ability to say no. You helped us a lot on that. And do we have some more self-defense mechanisms that are to be taught to our children?
So self-defense is both in coming from within as a personal strength, as an internal strength from within, which starts with self-respect and self-dignity. It starts with confidence in one's own abilities. So it is important that we need to be able to have that confidence in ourselves from our internal strengths, from the confidence which we can repose in ourselves, in our competencies, in our goals that we have designed for ourselves for a better future in this world and the hereafter. We have prioritized for ourselves certain things which have to be done to achieve success in this world and the hereafter. So this is important for us. And our parents should help us in developing these goals and these priorities.
All right.
They should assist us and guide us and lead the path in doing so. And we should be able to manage our time accordingly. So that internal strength comes, that when we are able, faced with a situation when things are being asked from us, that conflict with this feeling, with this understanding, with these goals and priorities, then we are able to say no.
All
but
right.
On the other hand, if we are from within ourselves able to break our rules ourselves, and we say, okay, it's a goal that I've set, this is my priority, but let's leave it for tomorrow.
All right. So are you trying to say that?
So if I'm easy going with my own rules, with my own priorities, then I will not be able to say no to anyone.
All right.
So if I take my own rules and on my own priorities not seriously, then I will also be confronted.
And also the respect.
And maybe when I do want to, somebody asks me for help.
Yeah.
I will, you know, it may be a good deed, it may be a wrong deed. If it's a good deed, yes, it will not go against my goals. But if it's a bad deed, if it's something he's asking me and imposing upon me something and bullying me to do, I will, you know, again, crumble in front of him if I'm not strong from within. And that strength comes from myself, and strength comes from my elders who repose confidence in me, and they don't compare with me with others. They take me for what I am and build upon my strengths and make me build upon those strengths. If,
right.
Yes, every one of us has weaknesses from within. Everyone has certain weaknesses. Weaknesses have to be overcome. They have to be
worked upon.
And the strengths have to be used
to replace them
and work.
Yeah.
And number two, physical strength. Physical strength is necessary.
Now, how important is that physical strength, and why is it necessary? We'll ask you after a short break. Now, listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are with Professor Salman Nakavi, and Professor is discussing with us how important is self-defense in children and what are the mechanisms you can teach them. And now, Professor, you were saying that physical development is very, very important in self-defense.
Yes, exactly. So as far as the internal spiritual strength goes, that is important. Intellectually, we should be strong. Emotionally, we should be in control of ourselves. But of course, physical strength is also important. Physical abilities are the main important. So we need to make our children take proper nutritions. we should be taking them for sports activities and especially for self-defense classes also. And I advise girls for that also, for them to go to self-defense classes as a responsibility, because Islam has said that we need to defend ourselves. And it is not allowed for us to refrain from defending ourselves if we can.
Yeah.
So we need to go for physical strength, physical activities, and parents should give time to their children to develop these physical strengths. And even the posture in which we sit. Yes, we should not sit or walk in a way that shows arrogance.
All right.
But it should show modesty, confidence.
All right.
Our way of walking, our way of talking should be sober, should reflect
modesty plus confidence
and strength and confidence. And another person can't even think of imposing his own will upon us.
Yeah.
So that is important, that we imbibe in our children internal strengths and physical strengths.
Yeah.
And we are able to develop them in a very balanced way. So children, even if they may have not a strong body, it could be, strengthened. Many people with huge figures, they are not strong.
Okay.
Boys with small figures, they are very strong.
Okay.
Because they've developed their strengths, their physical strengths, they've exercised, they've gone for sports, they've gone, developed them. Their mental and physical strength has been developed, and parents play a very major role by taking time out with their children, by leading by example, by taking time out with them, taking them to classes, them to those classes which are important. To gymnasiums, to carry out different exercises which are very good for our health.
Yeah. Well, Professor, we have some very important questions that we have received from New Zealand from a 15-year-old. I'll ask you the question after a short break, dear listeners. Stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, "Honor your children and teach them good manners."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and we are with Professor Salman Naqvi. Professor Salman Naqvi, we have a very important question from New Zealand. This is just a 15-year-old girl, and she is asking that she is on a social media platform wherein she has now a number of followers, and she has learned as per Islamic teachings that it's obligatory to say Walaikum Assalam if someone says salam to you. But is it mandatory on the social media platform as well? Because sometimes I feel like people who are messaging me are not important, or they are just trying to pass their time. So what she's trying to say over here is that now she knows Islamic rulings on talking to people, but she feels like sometimes it's not very important that people are asking the information for. Is it necessary to develop a relationship with those who are just starting with a salam and now they want to develop a relationship with you on the social media platform? So how can she manage that?
So relationships, whether they are in the physical
world
or the virtual world, of course that virtual world is also now a real world. It's a physical world in a sense. So yes, communicating with each other has the same rules as any other relationships have. And you need to take care of the fact that if you're getting into a relationship, it will take you into a situation which is not going to be acceptable as far as religion and Islam goes, then you should avoid it. Answering back to a salam is maybe necessary, but then continuing with the relationship if it is not going to be of any assistance to you in your goals, then you should, you know, not continue with that. Sometimes saying salam and answering salam is obligatory. Of course, sometimes you have salams in general messages all over the time. You need to, you don't need to answer them. But if you,
so it's not mandatory.
If there's a personal message to you and there's a salam to you, you answer that. But to continue that relationship depends upon the red lines that you have.
What I presume, what she's trying to say is that is it necessary to maintain a distance on social media platforms while developing relationships with others, and which could be a form of, you know, self-defense on social media?
Yes, it should be. One should take the precautions, and parents should be careful of their children if they develop such relationships. That is important. I mean, the parents should be on the outlook for such a situation happening or such a relationship developing. And especially girls should be, you know, very, parents should be very careful and sensitive about any type of relationship which is developing with girls in the house. And they can see that on the social media. It should be managed, it should be controlled. And the girls should especially confide in their parents that such a situation is happening. Even if they, for example, they've set up a platform, they think they are providing services to society. But, you know, shaitan has his ways. And he can, you know,
trap you from anywhere.
Yes, he can come and influence you and penetrate into you, towards you, and get to you without you even realizing what's happening. So we need to be on the guard. We need to be on the lookout for such an event. That relationships should be very carefully managed. So that is important. Yes.
So those coverings and so those guidelines, respecting those red lines, respecting those Islamic guidelines, is not just confined to the real world. It also applies on the social media world. And you're saying for a girl, it's not very mandatory to be answering each and everything. What she feels like is important, she can share that. And what she feels like is unimportant, she can actually refrain from sharing that, or actually texting back rather than thinking that it is a disrespect. So yeah, hey, it's not a matter of disrespect as per you, and it's a matter of actually staying safe and staying secure, like you stay safe in the real world. So one has to be very, very cautious about the social media world as well. Thank you so much, Professor, for being with us and giving us so beautiful advices and helping all the time the children, these parents. So dear listeners, not just parents, even if it's the teens who are listening to us, if it's the children who are listening to us and have issues with the parenting of their parents and have any questions, or even the parents have any questions, so you can actually feel free to email us at theenglishradio@irib.ir. Or you can actually listen to our programs again on our official website, which is www.parstoday.ir/en. Go to the tab COI, Call of Islam, and you will find an archive of our programs there. You can also find us on the social media platforms by just typing Call of Islam. Thank you so much for being with us. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5 and
Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.